killing any ghosts we encounter. It has been a month since the Federation launched a full-scale attack against us, which we barely survived with a temporary ceasefire. But compromise is difficult when what they want is our nation itself. So the next siege could come today, tomorrow, a month from now. There is no telling. When you're fighting a losing war, you are always on edge. Morning light has turned the sky a bruised pink by the time I arrive at the edge of our compound. As I walk, I notice the metal workers bustling around their stations, the sea silk trim of their hats trembling in the wind.
"It's the Bessayan," one of them says with a sneer.
Another lifts an eyebrow at me.
"Still alive, huh, little rat? Well, if you die before Tuesday, I'll still win my bet."
Words like these used to stick in my chest until it hurt to breathe. I'd turn my head down in shame and scurry past. But my mother always told me to keep my chin up. "Look proud," she would say to me as she patted my cheek, "until you feel it." So now I wink back and smile a secret smile. The metal worker looks away, annoyed that his barb didn't hook me. I stand straighter and continue down the path without a word. I haven't spoken out loud since the night my mother and I first fled to Mara's borders, when a Federation shell of poison gas permanently scarred the flaps of my vocal cords. I was 8 years old at the time. My memories of that night are inconsistent, some clear as crystal, others nothing more than a blur of soldiers and the light of fires engulfing homes. I can't remember what happened to my father. I don't know where our neighbors went. I think my mind has buried most of those memories, shrouded them in a haze to protect me. That night left my mother with a head full of snow-white hair. I came out of it with no more voice and scar tissue twisting the inner lining of my throat. To this day, I'm not sure if I can't speak because of those scars, or because of the trauma of our escape, of what I witnessed the Federation doing to our people. Perhaps it's both. All I know is that when I open my mouth, what's left is silence. I suppose I now make use of that silence. In my line of work, at least, it is essential for survival. That was what first drew me to the Strikers. When I was small, I would join the crowds to watch the famed patrols head out past Newage's walls, ready to face the Federation's monsters. They are Mara's most elite branch of soldiers, revered by everyone, notorious even in other nations. My eyes would shine at the elaborate harnesses looped around their shoulders and waist, their guns and knives and black steel arm guards, the masks covering their mouths, the circular emblem embroidered on their sapphire sea silk coats that draped down to their boots. I loved their silence. I loved that it meant survival to them. They moved like shadows, with no sound except the hush of boots against the ground. I would linger there, balanced on the branch of a tree, transfixed by their lethal grace until they had disappeared from view. Now, I'm one of them. It is less glamorous when you are the one riding toward death. Still, it's a job that means I can afford to put food on my mother's table and a roof over her head. Other Strikers are at the gate now, ready for our sweep. Corian Wyn Barra, my shield, is already here, his back turned to me. Dew shines in the high knot of his hair, and a breeze pushes against his coat's hem. I'd heard him leave his room this morning when I was still under my furs. He moves so lightly that no one else would have noticed the hush of his door closing. As always, the sight of him settles my nerves. I'm safe here. I tap his shoulder as I reach him, then give him a mock frown and sign to him, "You left without me." Corian looks sidelong at me. He clutches his heart as if I've wounded him.
"What? And leave little Talon to fend for herself? I would never," he signs, his gestures teasing and light.
"But," I sign back,
"but they were serving fresh fish cakes this morning."
"Did you?"